Good morning. My name is Keosha Bond, and I will be starting off the beginning of this presentation going over the results from our formative phase of the development of our HIV prevention intervention called Straight Talk. Okay, this is just a presentation disclosure. And just to give you a picture of how the epidemic has affected New York City, in general, since 2005 and continually, disparities between race and ethnicity and new HIV diagnoses have remained consistent, with African Americans having the highest percentage of new diagnoses. And among heterosexual men, African American men make up 55% of the new cases among men in 2008. And just to give you a sense of where these men are living, many of them are living in some of the dark red areas on the map, which are South Bronx, Central Brooklyn, and Harlem. And these neighborhoods have the highest diagnosis rate in New York City. And they also have the highest rate of people living with AIDS or HIV in New York City. And just to go over some of our study and intervention, it took several different phases for us to get to the end result, which was the pilot of our intervention. We went from looking at the epidemiology of it to conducting the formative research, which I will discuss today, to the application of the intervention to the pilot of the intervention. And the purpose of Straight Talk, really, is to reduce the frequency of unprotected sexual intercourse, decrease concurrent partnering, and increase HIV testing among African-American heterosexual men living in high-prevalence neighborhoods in New York City. The two neighborhoods that we focus on in this study are the South Bronx and Central Harlem. And through the formative phase, we examine how personal factors such as HIV risk perception, behavioral factors like inconsistent condom use, social structural factor such as mass incarceration, and also historical factors play a part in their sexual risk behaviors and experiences with HIV testing. The study population consisted of men who identify themselves as African American, Black, Caribbean Black, or multi-ethnic Black between the ages of 18 and 45. They were all residents of Harlem or the South Bronx. They reported HIV negative or unknown HIV status. And for behavioral criteria, we included men who had vaginal or anal sex with a woman in the past 3 months or 100% protected sex with no more than two partners. And these men were considered low risk. And those who had unprotected vaginal or anal sex with two or more women in the past 3 months were considered high risk. We did not include those who had injection drug use in the last 3 years, or those who had oral or anal sex with a man in the past 5 years, or have participated in any HIV or substance abuse study in the past 6 months. Through street recruitment, we were able to recruit 61 men. We conducted 61 quantitative interviews, which we call a brief risk assessment. We recruited at least 40 high-risk men and 21 low-risk. And the brief risk assessment basically went over demographic factors, sexual risk behaviors, partnership characteristics, substance use, and HIV history. We also conducted 5 focus groups, 2 prior to the in-depth interviews, and 3 post the in-depth interviews, and 30 qualitative in-depth interviews, which gave us more of a detailed description of the reflection of how all these personal, behavioral, social factors impacted their risk behaviors. So some of our demographics show that the mean age for the men was about 33. Some of the men ranged between 25 to 41 years old. Most of them were born in the U.S. Majority of them had an education less than high school and an income less than $10,000 per year. 61% were on public assistance, and many of them had either a history of incarceration as well as in the last year had experienced incarceration. But another factor that played an important role was that 66% of them, majority of them, had children, and the majority of them either lived with their children or they supported them. And just to go over some of their behavioral risk characteristics, at least the mean number of partners was approximately 4.6. and the mean number of partners without any condoms was about 2.6, and 87% of them had had an episode of vaginal or anal sex without a condom in the last 3 months. Another surprising number was that 98% of them had had HIV testing, and in the past year, 82% had an HIV test. So many of them were felt they were current with their testing. Another significant factor was that only 78% of those had discussion with their partners about their status, or in 69 only discussed it with their partner status. Here's some of the nitty-gritty of what we found from our qualitative study, which included our focus groups and our in-depth interviews. Regarding HIV/AIDS knowledge, we found out that it was minimal and that there was basic education that was needed because of that, and that their personal risk assessment was low in regards to HIV, and their partner's assessment method was either invalid or unreliable, and there seemed to be a cycle of risk because of this. With condom use, it seemed that it was infrequent, and in general it was disliked. It was only with selected partners, and it basically it ruined pleasure, and it was acceptable for pregnancy prevention, and it was critical to HIV prevention, but it was still not used. So they had a basic understanding that it was important, but it still wasn't a factor into them using it. And regarding concurrent partnering, it was seen as normative in the community among these men. It was familiar, it was frequent, it was not a problematic unless it was cheating on the main partner. And there was some difficulties associated with it, but it was unwritten and socially acceptable rules to the conduct regarding these various partners. So if between a partner being a primary partner or a casual partner, they decided if it was acceptable. And it can result from financial need also. Like in this quote, they said, "My pops got 18 kids, like 4 different women. My brother got now, he got like 12, 2 different women. My other brother got 2 kids, 2 different women, like all males that I know, like you know. I call myself a hoe sometimes, you know, like I get around." So to this person that spoke up in the focus group, he saw it as being normative because the people around him were doing it also. And regarding HIV testing and communication, we found out that it was also common but often reactive. It caused anxiety and relief at the same time, but there was misunderstandings regarding the window period, and there was still a little confusion. And regarding fatherhood, which is on a brighter note of this topic, it had emerged as a reason for self-protection behavior among the men who were interviewed. For example, this individual said, "The biggest thing that happened in my life was my daughter, and it changed everything." And several of the men discussed their children as the primary reason for adopting and maintaining a healthier lifestyle, and that included condoms. They said, "Without them, there's no meeting. They can keep me focused, they keep me level-headed, and they keep me on that straight path." So in general, certain themes came out of our interviews and our focus groups, such as sex and sexuality. Sex is a basic desire, it's a need, and it's available, and men's natural nature to partner a lot, and it's event-based. Women and type of partners, there's different women, and the partners for different needs. There's long-term and main-term relationships are infrequent, and there's little communication, and there's some apathy. And with masculinity and fatherhood and fathers, it's an important life event and is often marked by a turning point and accounts of fathers and how they fathered and fathering, and their identity as being a father and a man also, and the children as developing beings. They saw this as an important role in their life. And economics and society and social structures, the impact of finance had a great impact on the romances also, and the partnering does not affect opportunity, it's just the partner type, and it complicates long-term relationships and accounts, and financial interdependence affects relationships and sex, desire for financial stability. So a lot of times, their sexual relationship kind of also depended on their financial situation. And in addition to our interviews, we also had a community expert team panel, which ranged from an HIV outreach worker to a minister. And some of the things that came out of that was that the silenced black man, how the black man voice is not heard in the community, and the ambivalence connection to family and partners in the community, the labeling black man, which has always been seen as being negative, and in a larger society, the dehumanization of the black man, and also the matriarchy in black community, how there's a lack of black role models in the community. And some of the lessons that we learned that with condom use, we learned afterwards that it's also a sign of being in a relationship status, whereas in concurrent partnering, we already knew that was normative, but it's also a way of survival. And with HIV testing, we assumed that prior to the study that the rates would be low, but we found out that the rates were high, but there was a misuse of the information. A lot of the men saw that as a sign for them to, if they showed their papers showing that the HIV results were negative, it was okay for them to engage in unprotected sex. And so in conclusion, this data identified the need for HIV prevention intervention to focus on, one, basic HIV knowledge, two, common use barriers and skills, concurrent partner, and correct and consistent HIV testing. And in addition, the roles of the economic oppressions and partnerships, masculinity and fathers, emerge as a processing, conditioning, sexual risk behavior. The team, and now I have Victoria Fries come and finish this up.
Well, I'm actually going to move very quickly because I would like for Malik Cupid and Ronald Harriet, Malik was our interviewer for the entire formative phase and a member of the intervention development team, and Ronald Harriet was also a member of the team, and both of them facilitated all of the groups. So my section was really to explain how we took the data and translated it into the intervention modules, so I'm going to move very quickly through that. We created a matrix which essentially connected the socio-structural and other factors to the behavioral outcomes, where we looked for mechanisms and spaces where we could create modules that would effectively either work to change behavior or operate as analytic processes through which men could engage in motivational assessments and whatnot to get to behavior change. We walked in assuming we would be using social cognitive theory, but to that we added empowerment, social identity, and rational choice theory. The techniques that we used were obviously information knowledge skills, but also a heavy emphasis on critical social and personal analysis, decisional balance, ambivalence, and motivation, and then communication through lots of different skills and techniques. We consciously decided not to use an intervention vehicle, and we integrated the recommendations of the panel. There was a big emphasis for our intervention on being very straightforward, direct, respectful, not gimmicky, just wanting to get in there, give the information, or offer information in a safe place to consider behavior change. The facilitators were non-clinicians, African-American men. That's what the men in our study said that they wanted. With human service experience and a strong commitment to black men's health. We went through a process where we did component testing, a manual revision, a pre-pilot, manual revision, and then the pilot. And so now I would appreciate it if Malik and Ronald could come up, and they're going to very quickly walk through the sessions that we did.
Yeah. Okay.
Good morning.
Okay, so what did we do? So we had four sessions, and we started off with session one, which addressed the basic HIV/AIDS knowledge that we felt the men were lacking. And in that, we asked them a bunch of questions, and some of the questions were, what does a virus do once it enters your body? What are some of the symptoms of HIV? And what was the window period? And we found that for a lot of the men, this knowledge was lacking. With the second session, I don't know, Ronald, if you wanted to jump in.
We don't have to push it back. I just want to touch that the education part, just regarding the virus itself, I kind of took it for granted that the people, the gentlemen that we was encountering, like, they had this information, but their knowledge level was a lot lower than we kind of anticipated, especially, like, regarding the window period, as Kiyosha mentioned a few minutes ago. Some of the guys were under the impression like, I got my papers, I'm good, or she got her papers, she good, not fully understanding like the window period and everything that revolves around that. So The education part, we did put a lot of time and effort into that part because that's where it was needed.
Absolutely. And with session two, we started by trying to address the tendency that the men had to make decisions whether to wear condoms based on the physical appearance of the women. And we segue this into several modules. That the first module tried to attempt to show how quickly STIs can spread within a sexual network. And we use this by placing a group of photos of women on the wall, and we had the men comment on who they were partnered with. And we also had the women color-coded, so we also showed that, okay, if you partner with that one, you have to take a dot, and it showed that by the end of the session, many men in the room actually had an STI. We also learned from the formative work that the men had limited knowledge, like we talked about, on how to properly use a condom. And most of the men did not know what proper lubrication they should use with certain condoms. Most men were still using oil-based lubricants instead of water-based lubricants. And there was a huge conversation about the pros and cons of condoms.
And one more thing about the condoms. One of the things that we did with the condom section is we also introduced them to the female condom. We also let the guys know it's okay not to have all the responsibility on you. It's okay for the women to have some of the responsibility. And we found like one of the myths or one of the reasons or excuses why so many people weren't using condoms were, oh, I'm allergic to latex. Well, if you're allergic to latex, here's an option, the female condom.
And in session three, we attempted to draw a connection of the men's personal, social, structural factors as it related to their sexual behaviors. And we did this by asking the men to provide us with a timeline of their life events, and we overlaid that with their sexual partners, both main and casual, and we tried to draw a connection with the events that were going on in their life and their sexual behaviors at the time. And we highlighted the turning points, and by turning points, what we mean is when they actually decided to take the condoms off with their partners. And we talked about strategies for keeping the condoms on. Some of the strategies were, you know, to think about, you know, future child support, the health of their partner if they were in a main relationship, and another strategy was simply just the availability of condoms. Some of the men would go out without even carrying a condom some nights. Mm-hmm. So.
And one more thing about that. Wow, you just lost me. Go ahead. You lost me, man. About the condom use. The other thing, and this was like a real touchy issue, as you can probably imagine, which was reintroducing condoms to long-term relationships. If, you know, these guys were in long-term relationships, and we're introducing them to knowledge that they didn't have prior to this. How were they going to introduce these condoms to their relationship? And that was, you know, that's a big barrier in itself.
And this next session here was one of Ron's favorites. So in this session, we talked about masculinity and fatherhood. From the component testing, pre-pilot testing, and everything, we learned that this was a huge area that we think we could actually get through to the men and get them to draw some of the connections with their sexual behavior and protecting themselves and how it impacts their family as a whole. So,
yeah, and like Malik said, this was one of my favorite sessions, and the reason why is because we had a room full of masculine men, and for them to break down and talk about their experiences with their fathers, the impact of them their fathers being absent in their lives, how did that contribute to some of their decisions, and also the route that they might have taken in their own lives. And just that connection of them not having their fathers, and as Kiyoshi, in one of the slides that Kiyoshi just showed, many of these men, they also have children, and one of the turning points in their lives was when they had their child and the importance of how their children, you know, are to them. You know, that was.
Okay, so I just got a cue that time is quickly ending. So No problem. So I'm just gonna jump to the summary. We had a few other slides. Let's go back. So we had a few other slides, but what did we expect to find? We expected to find that there wasn't really a connection between the men made between their personal lives and social structural issues as it relates to the sexual behavior. What was revealed during the pilot, we expected low levels of knowledge in terms of knowing about HIV, AIDS, HIV testing, lack of knowledge, HIV communication. We found that there was little communication made between or that happens between partners in sexual relationships. The pilot also revealed that with condom use, the cons outweighed the pros for most men. Men hate condoms generally. There's, like I said, a few conversations when the condom comes off. And oftentimes the decision whether to wear a condom depended on the partner's status, whether she was a main partner, a casual partner, or some other category that the men used. With the concurrent partnering, we found that it was commonly held that concurrent partnering was natural. We had a subway map module where we actually demonstrated to the men that they are concurrently partnering with women who live in neighborhoods of high HIV prevalence. And with masculinity and fatherhood, this resonated, but it elicited some raw emotions. Men were actually very disappointed in themselves, and they were motivated to be better citizens. And how well did the intervention address these issues? I think overall we got positive feedback. The men appreciated the knowledge. Much of it was new. We provided them with a referral list of social services. And let's see, summary. We focused on a narrow demographic of African-American men who self-identify as heterosexual and who were at risk, right? And condom use continues to be a difficult sell. Partner concurrency needs to be addressed more robustly, and we need to actually pull out more of that connectedness between partnership status, risk level, condom use, and identity. And this is we gave the men a rare opportunity to talk and consider their sexual behaviors in a safe environment. So I think that's it.
Can I just add one thing? I know time's up. I just want to add one thing, and this is so key. One of the things that came out of this is so many of the guys that came through Straight Talk, they left with a commitment, not to us and themselves, but to their community, because like I said, it was new knowledge, it was new information. So they left with their own obligation, their own commitment. I'm going to bring this information back to my friends, back to my community, and I think that's so important because the education is where we was lapsing at.
Thank you. Have a good morning.
Thank you.